Thank you for listening to the serialized podcast version of The Mark of a Druid, a fiction fantasy novel written and read by Rhonda R. Carpenter. I suggest that you start the story at the beginning, and to be sure that you get all of the episodes, go to themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Episode 17, Chapter 25, Monday on the Mainland. Lori Katz had spent Sunday in the arms of her fiancé, James Forrest. They had fallen asleep in a clinging embrace and awoke to the sound of the alarm clock. The twinkling strands of lights hung over her bed, and she stared at them while James kissed her shoulder, sending a pleasant tingling throughout her body. The platinum engagement ring glittered in the morning light. She was so happy. James was everything she'd ever wanted in a lover and a mate. Gentle and kind, she thought. Not a lick of mechanical skill. This morning, that is what she needed. Someone who could get her Mustang running again. She needed to go to work, and she knew James would not be available to take her. He nudged her. Everything all right? Mm-hmm. Just thinking about the car. Do you want me to change my plans? I could. No need for that, James. I can call in. I'm sure Beth can handle things until I can get there. If you're sure. I need to get a move on. I've got to run home and change. Then research at the Department of Vital Statistics has to be done this morning. And, oh, lunch with David. I'm sure, sweetheart. You go. I'll see you at the clinic later. He kissed her, as if it was the first time their lips had ever touched. And she sighed in contentment. Who needs a man that can turn a wrench when you have one that kisses like this? James left, and Lori called the mechanic. She felt lucky that he could look at the car. She made arrangements for a tow truck to pick up her car and transport it to the mechanic shop. That meant taking public transportation to work. She called the office and asked Beth to hold down the fort until she dealt with her Mustang's failing horsepower. Then she checked the bus schedule. It would be noon before she could get to the clinic. She absent-mindedly twisted the engagement ring on her finger. James was on top of the world when he left Lori's apartment. He could barely contain his exuberance. She had accepted his marriage proposal. They would set a date and live happily ever after. Following a quick shower and a shave, he was on the road in gridlock traffic. The Department of Vital Statistics was on Wilshire off the 405 freeway, and at 9 in the morning, Angelinos were on their way to work. For a change, he didn't care. He was in much too good a mood to let traffic upset him. He pulled into the parking lot at 10:30. An older woman behind the counter winked at him when he approached, file folders in hand. He greeted her with a dazzling smile. Good morning, Maggie. Hi there, Mr. Forrest. How can I help you today? I need access to the microfiche for 1883 birth records for Utah and 1902 death certificates for Kansas. No problem. Let me set it up for you. I'll put you on Terminal 5. Is that okay with you? Sounds great, Maggie. I'll meet you over there. James made his way to the designated terminal, and the clerk entered the access codes in the system. Yellowish letters filled a blank screen, and James went to work. David sauntered into the clinic. He gave a half-hearted greeting to Beth and went straight to his office. He unlocked his desk drawer and slipped the cassette marked Lisa Montgomery in the back of the drawer. Over and over in his mind, the sound of Samantha's voice spun on. Who is your queen? She asked, and he answered, You are. David knew he had a job to do, and he pulled the remaining three tapes from his briefcase. He casually slipped the tape marked James into his sports jacket pocket and walked to the reception counter. Smiling his most charming smile, he greeted Beth. Hey, Beth. How's your day?
Afternoon, David. It's almost perfect. Something I can do for you?
Actually, I was hoping that you could help me. I have a new sample of music I'm working on and, well, I'd like your opinion. He smiled and she took the outstretched cassette tape.
Happy to.
Beth took the tape with a hesitant smile.
I'll listen to it tonight. Is that okay?
That's nice of you. Thank you. Where's Lori today?
Car trouble. But I expect her any minute.
The phone rang. Beth held up one finger. Lori entered the clinic and nodded to David.
then slipped around the corner and stowed her purse in the big file cabinet at the back wall. She spun the engagement ring so the diamond was on the underside of her finger and approached the reception counter. Beth booked an appointment, then ended the call. "Hey, Lori, get your car fixed?" Beth asked hopefully. "Had the old girl towed to the fix-it man. Looks like my Mustang needs to be put out to pasture." David laughed a little too loudly. Lori and Beth could see how fake his laugh was, and they exchanged a knowing glance. "Need a break, Beth? I'll handle the phones. Anything I should know?" "Okay, I could use lunch. Oh yeah, Eve is out of town until Wednesday. She is available by pager if you need her."
"Really? Where'd she go, Beth?" David asked.
"Catalina, with an old friend."
"Sounds like the boss lady is having a good time," he replied.
Beth bowed out of the conversation and left for the small lunchroom at the back of the office suite. Lori took her place and looked up at David questioningly.
"Something I can do for you, David?"
"Well, I came up to ask a favor of you."
"Oh, really?"
One eyebrow rose in question. "I wondered if you could have a listen to this." He held out the cassette.
"What am I going to hear?"
"It's some music I've been working on for background and hypnosis sessions. I just need to know if you find it pleasant or too energizing. Tell me what you think. I'd really like to have your opinion."
"Sure, I'll give it a listen." She slipped the tape under the counter.
"Thanks so much. You're one in a million."
Lori did not believe him, but if he was the worst she had to deal with at work, she could handle it. David went to his office with a bounce in his step. When James entered the clinic, Samantha stood hovering at the front desk. Beth and Lori both looked annoyed, but at the sight of James, Lori's face lit up. Samantha eyed them.
"What are you doing here? You're not on the schedule,"
Samantha queried with a strange glint in her eye.
"I have a lunch meeting with David."
Samantha's next statement turned Lori's head.
"Have you heard the new music he's been slaving over?"
"No.
I'll have to ask him to give me a sample."
"Here, take the one he gave me." Lori reached for the tape on the desk.
"No, let David give him one of his own." Samantha reached up and placed a firm hand on Lori's outstretched arm.
Lori's mind flashed as if it had stalled on a face she did not know. Flowing strawberry blonde hair encircled a fine-boned, sharp-featured, strikingly beautiful woman. As soon as the face came into focus for Lori, it changed. It contorted with anger. The lips twisted. This woman's shrill scream rang in Lori's brain, but she couldn't make out the words, and the flash was gone. Lori pulled the tape back, a bit shaken. James looked at Samantha a little confused, but unconcerned, he agreed with her.
"No worries, Lori. I'll get my own."
His fiance glared at Samantha as if probing her.
"Well, I have to prep for my next client. Lori, send her back when she arrives."
Samantha withdrew from Lori's scrutiny. James and David sat at the restaurant talking casually about research and the upcoming staff meeting. David's straight blonde hair hung limply around his face. James wondered what this meeting was about, but he didn't ask, not wanting to seem rude.
"James, I have a favor to ask. I need your input on this." He slid the cassette tape across the table, but never took his hand from it.
"This is your new background music?"
James inquired.
"Yes. I need to gauge the depth of Alpha State, and I know you're the best one to assist in this area. I'd really like to have your thoughts by tomorrow. Would it be possible?"
"I'll give it a listen," James said, taking the tape from David.
As agreed, James didn't say anything to David about his engagement to Lori. The couple had decided to keep the news to themselves, at least until they'd set a date. James made small talk throughout the meal. David sat with a strange, glazed look. James was sure he was just tired. He'd mentioned that he'd been up late the previous night. They left the restaurant. David paused at James's car.
"I'll call you tomorrow to find out what you think. If that is all right with you."
"Sure, David.
But could you call my cell? I may not be home."
"Oh, hot date?"
No, not at all. I have errands early." He lied, turning away so David would not see the color rise in his face. James was not a good liar. He had a date with Lori and didn't want to let it slip. He sat behind the wheel of his car and watched David cross the parking lot. James had no idea where in his schedule he was going to review the recording, but maybe he would listen to it in bed. If you've reached this stage in the book, then you're halfway. On to chapter 26, Retribution. They sat in a field of clover. Birch trees rocked to the wind's melody. A current of air swept past them, and Andrea released her grip on her friend's shoulder. Eve took the notebook from her mentor's lap and wrote everything down. When she had finished, Andrea took Eve's hand and made a direct effort to look into the depths of her emerald eyes. "Eve," she said, "I want you to take me back again."
"Yes, Andrea, I will. Let's switch places."
She squeezed Andrea's hand tighter, and Eve felt a rush of relief wash over her. She was not alone in this endeavor. And better yet, of all of the experts she knew in this field, her first teacher was the one who was there to help her through this. They exchanged positions. Eve readied the cassette. The sun was lower in the sky, and she wondered what time it was.
"Which way is north?" Eve asked.
Andrea pointed toward the stand of birch trees. Eve stood facing them. The bark, white and curled in on itself, moved slightly in the breeze.
"Fitting it should be birch," she mumbled in a faraway voice.
"In preparation for the coming of new life, we must first empty ourselves of the debris of the past, the old. The birch shows us the way. It points the direction we must travel, curled in on ourselves in retrospection. The whiteness of its bark offers us light and brightness on our travels to the world of the past, and then guides us home." The strange thing was is that she knew these words as druidic in nature. Andrea stared, mouthing the words with her. Shaking her head, Eve cleared her throat and placed the cassette cover upright on the ground, its shadow indicating the time.
"Looks like it's about 2 o'clock, Eve stated plainly, trying to ignore what she'd just said.
"How did you do that?" Andrea gazed at her watch and then back at Eve in disbelief.
"What, the words of the birch?
No, I think I understand how you knew that." A soft smile lit Andrea's face. It took the stress from the air around them.
"The time, silly. How did you know the time?"
"Oh, well, it's what every good Girl Scout would do without a watch." Grinning up at Eve, Andrea burst out laughing.
"Since when have you been a good Girl Scout?"
"Anyway, I have a watch," they laughed.
"Are you ready to begin?" Eve asked.
Andrea stretched out on the coats.
"I'm ready,"
with a yawn. Beginning a gentle progressive relaxation, Eve led Andrea through the muscles of her body and down the stairs to the hallway of life, saying, "One of the doorways will draw your attention as the one that leads you to Athene's lifetime. When you reach that doorway, nod your head, so I'll know you're there." Eve watched. Andrea's chin moved up and down in a nod. "Open the door and step inside," Eve said. "Tell me what happens next." Fear rippled through Athene's soul as she spoke to Gilno. "She wants me to tell Xavier about Davith and Perig." Gilno took her hand in his and simply listened to her speak, his brown eyes wide and alert, like that of a stag.
"What should I do?"
"Athene, they must be punished. What Davith and Perig did is cowardly and cruel. I will take responsibility for not being able to stop the filthy bastards." Shame colored his cheeks. His grip on her hands loosened, but she clung tighter to him.
"I know you feel responsible for what happened. You did all you could to help me. None of this is your fault or mine."
His eyes misted. Athene felt bonded to him. She did not wish to see him suffer for her, and she would do nothing that would cause trouble for him. That is, if Alion could be stopped. Gilno's eyes followed a shadow from the opposite side of the fowl pen, where they were crouched.
"Great mother of us all, it's Dubjila.
Go, go now. I will draw her the other way." But Athene knew it was too late from the old healer's stride. She'd seen her talking to Gilno, but had she seen them holding hands? Athene was not sure. She bolted to her feet, closing the distance with ease. She knew Gilno went in the other direction and hoped the shadows were sticking to him.
"Athene, why are you here with the chickens? You have tasks to complete."
Her ice-blue glower was like a knife slicing through a leaf.
"I am about my labors, Dubjila."
"Are you now?
And do your labors include holding hands with Gilno?"
"No, teacher." She could not lie. It was one of her gifts, it was said. But in that moment, she wanted only to fabricate a story that would be believable. She could not. Instead, she chose silence.
Very well, if you will not speak of it.
Then, be about your work. A slight smile crossed the old healer's lips, then vanished quickly. She turned and walked in the direction Gilno had gone. Athene hoped he had reached a safe distance. She knew Dubjila was suspicious, but in truth, Athene would risk all to save Gilno from trouble. She owed him that. He had been so nice to her. She felt safe around him, and no one else, not even her sister, made her feel safe these days. Alian rounded the corner.
"Walk with me, little bird," Alian said. "I must speak with you."
"Yes," Athene thought. "I imagine you do. You always have something to say."
"If you like," she said aloud.
"You must tell Xavier. They must pay for what they did." Alian stated this so sharply, Athene thought spiraled dangerously out of control. She couldn't think or breathe. Alian wants what she wants. She doesn't care if that would make me happy. She is unyielding. The blessed silence seemed not to go on long enough.
"I have spoken with Xavier. He assures me he'll do what he can for Gilno," Alian said.
"You spoke to Xavier? How kind of you, my sister." She knew it was useless to hold out, but she did not want the clan to know that she'd been taken against her will.
"If you do not make a formal accusation, Athene, they will do this again, and you will have done nothing to stop it. Do you want another girl to carry the same pain?"
Angry tears spilled down Athene's cheeks. She placed her hands over her ears.
"So now the safety of all the girls in the village rests on my shame. This is a responsibility I do not want. I want to forget it ever happened. Why does she push me so? Does she not care about my happiness or my honor?"
Somewhere deep inside, Athene knew Alian was right. But in that moment, she just wanted someone to take her far, far away. It was time for her to be a truthsayer, and she would do what must be done. Then suddenly she dropped her hands. Her fingernails dug into her palms, and she stomped her foot.
"Very well, Alian. If this is what you want, I shall hear the Brihan out."
Her tears stopped flowing. She straightened her back, thrust her chin forward, and strode to Xavier's dwelling. His door opened with a squeak. He spread his hands to them in greeting. Taking a seat on a carved bench, Alian pulled Athene down next to her.
"In what way may I serve you today, Alian?"
"Athene would like to. I want to know if there is any way to save Gilno from punishment if I were to make formal charges against Davith and Perig for the violation of a free person." Athene folded her hands in her lap and clamped her mouth shut.
"I will not shame you by asking the violation, as I have spoken with Alian and understand the severity of the crime. But Athene of the White Hair, I must ask you if your decision rests solely on Gilno's outcome."
It does not," she stammered.
"I see," he said.
Athene thought he saw more than he said.
"Charges like these must be public, stated and defended before a Council of Nine and the clan. I can promise you this, Athene. I will personally defend Gilno, but I cannot guarantee the Council's judgment. But if you, as the victim, will not condemn him, then the Council will likely take it as a sign of his innocence." As he waited patiently for her to answer, the silver streak of gray in his hair fell over his forehead.
"Then I will do this thing, not for me, but for the other young girls of our clan." She looked at Alian, a hint of venom in her blue gaze.
"Runners will be sent within the hour. You have made the right choice. I honor you as a free person, Athene of the White Hair. Let this be a step on your path as a truthsayer." She cringed. A truthsayer indeed, she thought. Will Alian never learn to hold her tongue and let others choose for themselves? She rose with a grace and dignity of someone well past her years, and left without a backward glance at her sister. Andrea's eyelids flickered.
Take a deep breath and go even deeper," Eve stammered over the words.
"Athene, what happens next?"
With a furrowed brow, Andrea slipped deeper into trance. A moment later, her body went rigid. The last few weeks were the worst of Athene's life. Xavier had felt it necessary she described the rape until she thought she would go mad. He wanted her to be able to stand before her attackers as a force to be reckoned with, not a victim. He explained this to Athene over and over. His voice rang in her ears as she approached the clan gathering. Others must be dissuaded, Athene. An example must be made. In the center of the village, the clan was gathered. Davith and Perig stood solemnly before them. Matok's head was bowed. He was to defend them. His tonsure gave him a long-faced look and intensified his bird-like features. Gilno stood before the clan as well, but apart from the other boys, and Xavier flanked him on the right. Athene's eyes locked onto Gilno's. He promised he would send her all of his strength today. His eyes, two warm brown pools of light, lit by the sun, were to be her reminder. No one, not even Alian, could help Athene to make this formal accusation. Athene resented Alian for this. 'Tis her fault. I'd never have told a soul of the rape if she had not insisted, but it does not matter now. Stiffening her back, resigned, she stepped in front of Davith. Andrea went silent. Eve's soul ached to comfort her. She wanted to tell her it was the right thing to do, that everything was going to be better. When she opened her mouth to speak, years of training automatically took over. Then, what happens, Athene? Eve almost choked on the words. Athene stared at the ground for long moments. Davith shuffled his feet nervously. Anger and shame ran through her mind. She lifted her eyes to meet his. The look that passed between them was mutual contempt. Arthfiel directed his voice to the council. These boys have committed a crime against a free person. I demand compensation in the name of our laws. His staff struck the ground three times, emphasizing his authority. Athene slapped Davith across the face with all the force she could gather. Her accusation was made. Behind him stood his mother and father. His father glared down at her and then spit in her face. A cry of distaste hummed around the crowd. She wiped slimy, mead-tainted spittle from her cheek and stepped in front of Perig. His parents stood stock still behind him. Had Athene's mother been alive or her father present, they would have stood behind her. Instead, the cause of all this stands in their place, Athene thought. Alian. Athene slapped Perig in the face, screaming in an effort to give herself power. She watched his mother weep. His father looked at her with almost clear silver eyes. A single tear drifted down his cheek and hung in his thick, graying mustache. Her strength waned, but she pushed on and moved before Gilno. She could not condemn him. He had done all he could. She raised both palms out in appreciation and then gently placed them on his shoulders. She looked directly into his fawn brown eyes, the eyes of a brave soul, and thought, I think I love this boy. She leaned forward, stretching on tiptoes, and gently kissed the side of his face. Speaking in a voice that all could hear, this boy should be a man. Gilno has shown his worth and has been found, in my eyes, great of heart. He saved what was left of me. I owe him a debt that is beyond word or deed. The crowd gasped. The council's discerning eyes took in every nuance. Alian stepped forward and hugged Gilno, thanking him for trying to protect her sister. His mother and father nodded to Athene, a show of gratitude and pride on their faces. She understood that her gesture might not help them, and so did Gilno. Athene of the White Hair, do you wish compensation? Arthfiel's voice hammered the point home. Before Athene spoke, Alian placed her hands to the sky, palms toward the sun. Athene,
rolled her eyes, and thought, "My sister once again cannot keep her mouth closed. In the name of our father, Canut, and in the name of our mother, Aroke of the White Hair, I demand compensation for the rape of my sister, Athene of the White Hair," Alian said in the voice of a priestess. "She has done no wrong, as you will hear. Let the council decide." When she stepped back, a hushed whisper gathered momentum in the crowd. One by one, the hands of almost all present thrust to the sky, demanding compensation. Orion swooped down on Davith and Perig. They ducked and covered their heads with their forearms. Orion's claws tore flesh. The boys screamed. Gilno remained steadfast in his place, untouched. The raven landed on the ground in front of him. The bird fully spread its glistening black wings, screeching three times. He lifted from the ground and flew in a circle overhead, landing in a birch tree. When he had settled in a ruffle of feathers, Athene also held her hands to the sun and demanded compensation. "On a day of peaceful beauty, I walked along the river composing poetry, sharing it with only my spirit. When I came through the trees, I saw Davith, Perig, and Gilno swimming in the river. I turned to leave, and before I could take more than a few steps, Davith was upon me, taunting and touching. He dragged me to the ground. 'Liar!' screamed Davith. Orion plummeted at him, landing on the back of his neck in a furious thrashing of beak and talons. When he flew back to the tree, stringy blonde hair dangled from his claws. Artfiel watched the bird with great interest, then cupped his hands over his mouth. The bird dipped its beak in understanding. "Now," Artfiel said to Athene, "you may continue." Athene wished her gift was to speak with animals, not to state the truth. "He held me down," she pointed to Davith, "with the help of Perig." Her finger pointed to the chubby boy. "I screamed for them to stop, to get off me, but they did not." The more she talked, the more she vowed she would not cry. "She wanted it, the bitch," Davith insisted. Artfiel cut him off. "We will hear your side soon enough." Gilno knocked Perig off of me, releasing my hands. "That is when I clawed Davith's face." She pointed to the scratches, forming her hand in a claw-like shape. The last pale streaks of healing white flesh were visible on his cheek. "See, the marks are still there," Athene rushed on. "Gilno fought a savage fight against Perig, while Davith took my body for his own sick pleasures. It was against my will, without my consent. He showed no respect for me or the laws of our people. As soon as Gilno had rendered Perig unconscious, he kicked Davith in the head. However, it was not in time to stop the violation. His seed was already inside me, mingled with my first blood. I was to share my body with a man of my choosing." Her eyes met Gilno's eyes, and she mustered her strength. "Is this not the right of every free person? Was this not my right?" Athene bowed her head in acceptance that the council would now decide. Matok whispered to Davith. The boy's face turned red. He glowered at the druid. Davith leaned to Perig, growling into his ear. Perig's shoulders sagged at Davith's words. Artfiel, shrouded in white, struck his staff on the ground. "Matok, High Druid of the Raven Clan, what have these boys to say?" "They speak as free people and have refused my assistance. May I say that the council should take into consideration that they are not yet men and cannot be treated as such. What say you, Davith, son of Nibis?" "She did not turn and run. She did not tell us to stop. She asked for it. She wanted it." His voice squeaked loudly with each sentence. He sneered at Athene. The crowd murmured. Their heads shook in disbelief. One of the six council members spoke. "Why, then, did she scratch you?" Athene did not see who would ask.
She didn't do this. His hand went to his face. I fell from a tree. He laughed, thrusting at his chest. Perrig nodded his head in practiced agreement. Each council member approached him to inspect the almost healed wound. Eye to jaw, one of them said. Yes, a most interesting tree. It seems to have had fingers, said another. It was a tree, Davith protested. Have you anything to add to your story? Arthfiel asked. She is a whore who couples with dogs. Enough, Xavier bellowed. Athene jerked in shock. Arthfiel slammed his staff to the ground. Perrig, son of Ladin, what say you? It was like Davith said, she wanted it. He visibly shook. Very well, Xavier. What has this boy to say? The silver-streaked lock fell onto his forehead as he spoke. Gilno, son of Locke, will speak as a free person. Gilno cleared his throat and squared his shoulders. Davith, Perrig, and I were swimming in the river. Athene of the White Hair has spoken true. The scratch was from her own hand, while I failed to protect her. He bowed his head and acquiesced to the council. Xavier swept his staff into the air. We cannot hold this boy to the standards of a man. He has not taken his rites of passage, but he has proven himself an honorable free person. He brought his staff down to the ground, striking it once in completion. Alian led Athene away to Dubjila. The council departed for the Great Hall, spending the next 3 days and nights sequestered while the rest of the village prepared for the Feast of Samhain. Athene was to receive her rites of passage just after the celebration of the new year. This was supposed to be a happy time for her, but it was not. She slept fitfully, unable to close her eyes without seeing the face of Davith hovering over her struggling body, without feeling his acidic touch on her skin. When the council reached their decision, all 9 members walked from the Great Hall. They looked haggard. The village gathered. Alian slipped an arm about her sister. Athene sidestepped her. Are you unwell, my sister? Alian asked. Her bottom lip quivered. Nonetheless, when she spoke, Athene's voice was strong and full. I am well. Do not act as if you care about my well-being. Let us be done with this, O Great One. Bitter sarcasm strained Athene's tone. Alian's face turned bright red. You, above all others, should know the truth of what had to be done. Athene did not answer. The central fire burned high in the early dawn sky. Many people whispered amongst themselves as Athene approached. She knew they were talking about her. It made her skin crawl. Alian stood silently, hands at her sides, fists clenched so tightly, nails pierced skin. Small droplets of blood gathered from her fingers, then dripped to the ground. So be it. I'm forced to make a spectacle of my shame, and she is angry with me. I shall never forgive her for this. In this lifetime or another, Alian will make this right. She knew this as a truth, but said nothing of it. Instead, she turned her back on her sister and stood before the council. Arthfiel spoke directly to her attackers. The law is specific in the case of Davith and Perrig. We have considered all that was said and all those who spoke. It is clear that Athene of the White Hair had no choice in this matter. She was forced against her will, her rights as a free person taken from her, defiled before her first bleeding. As the words came from his mouth, Athene's face grew hot, not from the fire, but from embarrassment. Since the rape, her bleeding had truly come. It was a blessing from the Great Mother that she was not with child. She was a woman, something to be proud of, but she felt no pride. She felt only shame, dishonor, and a great loneliness. Arthfiel continued, We have found the laws inflexible. Davith and Perrig, step before us.
You committed a crime against freedom. You took the right of choice, fouling her body before her time, and without her consent. Since neither of you have taken the rites of passage, you cannot be considered men. Therefore, your families will pay the compensation of 2 cows, 2 sheep, and 2 grain stores for the winter to Athene of the White Hair. You are to leave here, never to be recognized as men. You will never be allowed to own property or marry in any degree that is acknowledged by our laws. You are to leave here and never return. You will carry with you the mark of a tainted soul for the whole of this lifetime.
4 council members stepped forward and seized their arms, while 2 more approached with red-hot metal rods drawn from the fire. Davith and Perig's chest were bared, and the unnatural mark of a square seared into their flesh. Perig's screams pierced every ear, but Davith let out no cry. He held Athene's gaze with self-righteous indignation, broken only by Alian stepping between them. Davith struggled against his guard, but could not work himself free. The crowd calmed while Arthiel spoke once more, raising his staff in the air. As for Gilno, the law is not as clear. He is not yet a man and cannot be treated as such. He did all he could to protect Athene's freedom. However, he is obviously not grown enough to be considered for manhood this season, as his family had planned. His compensation to Athene will be personal to him and him alone. For 1 full cycle of the sun, 1 turning of the wheel, he will be trained in the law and in combat. If he survives this year, he will be given his right of passage. She breathed a sigh of relief for Gilno. While she was sure that the council planned a difficult year for him, his family would not be indebted to her, and for this she was grateful. Gilno stood proudly, unmarked, before Davith and Perig. Athene of the White Hair. Davith's voice was ragged. I will come, seeking retribution. I will succeed if it takes me every lifetime I ever live. The council dragged Davith and Perig away. Athene took the rites of passage just after Samhain, but it meant little to her. She was numb. Good. Very good, Andrea. It's time to come back. Take a deep breath. And when you reach 5, you'll be wide awake, remembering everything. Eve slowly counted to 5 and said, wide awake. Eve watched the trance slip from her face. Andrea's eyes opened at once. She looked up at Eve and shivered. The sun was low on the horizon. It would be dark soon. She didn't want to rush Andrea. Eve watched as Andrea gathered herself, sitting up and then stretching. Andrea pulled on her coat, sat on the stone, and recorded her experience in the notebook. They talked little on the way back down the dusk-covered hills of Catalina. In an attempt to break the silence that lay between them, Eve asked Andrea, "So, which do you prefer on the ride back tomorrow? Dramamine? Or a concoction of seaweed and peppermint?" She looked at Eve but did not laugh. Only a hint of a smile passed over her face, and she said, "Dramamine, please?" The evening in the hotel was quiet, too quiet for Eve. The 2 women sat with their own thoughts, packed and got up early to make the first ferry back to the mainland. As Andrea drove Eve home, they talked of only unimportant things, and parted with the promise to call each other in the morning. Eve held hope that the relationship was not severed permanently. Once again, thank you for listening to The Mark of a Druid. Announcements. Really quick. The Mark of a Druid is now available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and BooksAMillion.com, among other places on the web. If you know someone that likes to hold a book, and you're the one that likes to listen, pass the news on. I really appreciate all the listeners, and I appreciate your comments as well. Leave them at iTunes, and leave them at Podiobooks or themarkofadruid.com. Until next time, take care.